PQRST. Much thanks to Stitch for once again providing the intro and for being nice to my cat, Hopeful, who is also here for the recording. He and she got into it the other day. There was fur flying, and I don't even know what he has. Tendrils, but anyway. So last week on the podcast, I was talking about what not to do, in my humble opinion. And to kick things off in the second part of the recording, this is what I'm doing and here's why. First, I want to read a quote from a Michael Crichton book. Unlike his fiction, this one comes from his book called Travels, which is a fascinating book. He talks about being a resident when he was getting his medical degree. He was a doctor, which I did not know. He talks about his residency and some of the stories there. He talks about traveling the world. He talks about seeing people's auras. It gets a little odd, but fascinating book. But Crichton had decided to travel the world, and he wanted these big experiences. And he talks about how he was sitting, he was in Africa, in the Serengeti, and he wants to see some animals. And they're in this hide, I guess, in a tree. And the guide says, you have to be absolutely silent for however long it takes for the animals to arrive, maybe several hours. And he desperately wants to see animals, and so he's in the hide, and he's being silent. And he says this English couple joins them in the hide, and they could not be silent. I mean, they would be absolutely quiet for like 5 minutes, and then they'd start whispering to each other. And then they would just start talking in normal voices, and then they would start talking loudly, and they would be hushed again, and they would look irritated. But then they'd be silent for about 5 minutes, and then they'd start whispering. And he got really annoyed at them, but then he thought a little deeper, and he's like, here's what he had to say. I began to realize how many times the trip had repeated the lesson for me. The bees, there was an issue with bees where they just bees all over everywhere. And when they stop on this river crossing, not on the river crossing, anyway, in the middle of the jungle, they stop and bees just like swarm all over them. And the guide says, you just need to relax and they'll leave you alone. The more you fuss and stress and sweat, which is what the bees are wanting to lick off you, the worse this is going to get. So he had to relax and just deal with the bees being there. And another story, which he's going to refer to, there was a ruins up a river that he wanted to see, but unfortunately he got there a couple weeks too late and the river was too high. And he's like, well, I want to see him anyway. And the guides are like, okay. And they struggle for hours to try to get up this river, and they make it like half a mile to, you know, the 10-mile trek to the ruins. And he realizes that it was never possible, just like the guide said, but he wanted to see them, and so he was going to do anything he could. All right, so now, context. Back to the quote. I began to realize how many times the trip had repeated that lesson for me. The bees, I didn't like them, but I had to tolerate them. There was nothing I could do. The low water on the river, I wanted to go upstream, but there was nothing I could do. The absent animals. I didn't like not seeing them, but there was nothing I could do. I couldn't make it rain. I couldn't fill up the rivers or stop the jungle from flowering or make wild animals appear. These things were beyond my control, and I was forced to accept that, just as I was forced to accept the couple that wouldn't stop talking. In fact, I began to realize that although they couldn't stop talking, I had a much greater problem. I couldn't stop trying to control everything around me, including that couple. I couldn't leave things alone. I was an urban, technological man accustomed to making things happen. I had been taught countless times that you were supposed to make things happen, that anything less implied shameful passivity. I lived all my life in cities, struggling shoulder to shoulder with other struggling people. We all were struggling to make something happen, a marriage, a job, a raise, an acceptance, a child, a new car, new life, new status, the next thing. I'd lived in that frantic, active way for more than 30 years, and when I finally began to crack, when I tried to control everything about my life and my work and the people around me, I somehow ended up in the Malaysian jungle and experienced a solid week of events over which I had absolutely no control, and never would. Events that reminded me that I had my limits, rather severe limits in the greater scheme of things, and I had no business trying to control as much as I did, even if I could. And I ran across that quote and I thought, that is exactly the point I'm trying to make in last week's podcast, that not only the I'm going to step out in faith and trust that God will, but I think the majority of us, and I struggle with this too, we're trying to do exactly that. Again, from the book, I had been taught countless times that you were supposed to make things happen, that anything less implied shameful passivity. And the friend I mentioned last week, the comic friend who was frustrated with me because I'm waiting on God and I'm letting him dictate, him, God, not him, the friend, dictate what happens with this comedy thing. He's like, do you ask God, you know, whether you're supposed to have cereal for breakfast? Do you ask God what clothes to put on? I feel like he's implying that by putting this in God's hands, I'm being shamefully passive. Like, I don't even care, or I don't want to make the decisions. Let God do everything. And that is not it at all. I also said last week, I said that I could not find any examples of anyone doing that version, I'm going to step out in faith and trust for God to bless me. And God actually ran me across a version of this, because I've been reading the New Testament, I've been reading the words of Paul lately. And Paul, actually I was listening to, I have been reading the words of Paul lately, but what zeroed me in on this particular passage, I was listening to cassette tapes of a preacher that I respect. His name is Andrew Womack. Name drop, boom! And he used to come preach at my church in the 80s, so I've known him since I was a kid. And he has a ministry on the Daystar Television Network, and I respect him. And by and large, I agree with him. And he was talking about Paul and said that Paul, talking about being submitted to God, Paul went out to try to preach wherever. And let's see if I can find the reference. One second. Here we go. It's in Acts 16. And they went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. And when they had come up to Mysia, they attempted to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So passing by Mysia, they went down to Troas. And a vision appeared to Paul in the night, a man of Macedonia standing there, urging him and saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." And when Paul had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go on into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. So as near as I can tell, that is an example of someone stepping out in faith and trusting for God to bless them. Two things about that. A, Jesus had said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. So what Paul was attempting to do was something God had blessed. It was, I would argue that it wasn't Paul's vision, it was God's vision, and Paul was trying to carry it out. Secondly, and this is the important thing, Paul tries to go into an area and the Holy Spirit says no. Paul doesn't argue, Paul doesn't fight that, Paul says okay and turns aside. He tries to go into another area, Holy Spirit says no, Paul says okay and turns aside. And then when the Spirit says, actually this is what I want you to do, Paul says great, and he does it. So even if maybe he was getting out ahead of God a little bit, when God said stop, Paul stopped, no argument. When God said, go this way, Paul went that way. No argument. He was surrendered to the leading of the Holy Spirit. The desire in his heart to preach the gospel was still submitted to God's will. And I would submit, though I do this carefully, I would not be one to say that I could do better than Paul. But you read that passage where he tries to go in one place and he's denied. He tries to go another place and it's blocked. Arguably, if he had just stopped and asked God, where do you want me to go? I'm willing to say he might have saved some time and energy and struggle, money too, and not had to retrace his steps. So when I say that I have submitted everything to God and I'm in this period of waiting now with the comedy, which is no fun, I don't like waiting, it's been a struggle, but and I guess I haven't talked about it, it was to be talked about in this podcast. I have turned everything over to God. I really, really want to start making things happen. And a bit of it is that struggle that Crichton talks about, that it feels like by waiting around on God, by holding back and saying, okay, would you reveal what you want me to do next? I feel like I'm being passive, shamefully passive. Crichton's example, Crichton's whole book, he doesn't believe in God. he believes we're on our own. And so while he talks about giving, understanding that we have no control and giving up the struggle, unfortunately, he could not take it to the next logical step, which is turning the struggle over to someone who is in control, who does have the power. And that is what I am attempting to do. And it has been difficult. The October 7th show, which I only put on because the Spirit, a year ago, last month, inspired that to happen. It was a great show. We had a great night. I now have a good recording of the level I'm working at, comedy-wise, and I'm ready to start getting out there. I want to send out DVDs. I just happened to meet Lanny Garrett of Lanny's Clock Tower Cabaret. Name drop, boom! And I want to follow up on a possibility of a show with her, but God hasn't given me permission to do that. He hasn't released me to go do that. The only thing coming up is a possibility in February that a friend and fellow comic had to pass on and told them about me, and they were interested, and then they saw some of my comedy, and currently they seem to feel that I'm too conservative, or no, I'm sorry, that I'm not conservative enough. And my jokes about superheroes and pop music are a little too edgy for their senior group. So until I can start calling in Tuesday nights and get back up at Comedy Works, I have nothing on the scope at all. And for almost, for 2 months, I have been doing nothing since the October 7th show to try and get back up on stage. And the waiting is frustrating. And sometimes I feel like I must be screwing something up. I haven't heard, God has spoken, but I missed it because I was, distracted for 2 seconds. Or I've struggled with feeling forgotten as well. And that was a couple weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago. I was really struggling with that. And God was gracious and he said, listen, I have not forgotten you. And it was kind of him to speak that to me. He didn't say, I have not forgotten you, and here's the next thing I want you to do. The period of waiting continues, but he hasn't forgotten me. And I have a previous word of his that I can kind of stand on when I need to keep the faith that there is more coming, that there's comedy out there I haven't gotten to do yet, because the Holy Spirit spoke to me about 2 years ago, and said, hey, listen, when you get work for churches or nonprofits, I don't want you to charge them, which is fine. And I have no issue with that. But the thing that I'm holding on to now is that I haven't really gotten work for churches or nonprofits. I haven't had the chance to not charge anybody yet. And logically, that indicates that there's still opportunities out there, that it's not over. And I struggle with that. I struggle with feeling like I must be missing something, I'm ruining everything, it's all over. And that comes back to where I'm wounded, how I fear that I just don't have what it takes, especially when I'm really passionate about something. But the way that I'm going about this, again, I teased it several times last week, said, oh, I'm going to tell you how I'm doing things. The anti-making things happen, the anti-stepping out in faith and trusting that God will bless me. No, I'm trying to do this the other way. And let me back up a little further. Last week I talked about Phil Vischer and VeggieTales and how God had inspired it and God had directed him, and then he started getting ahead of God and thinking, I need to have a vision, and part of the vision was 3-2-1 Penguins, which failed, and part of the vision was a VeggieTales amusement park, which really failed, and people's careers were destroyed. People lost their jobs, some people lost their homes, big mess. And Phil was very humble, and he was humble enough to say in the book, I really screwed that up. And I took a look at this verse about, I believe it's Proverbs verse, the reference was in last week's podcast, where it says, for lack of vision, the people perish. He said, a better translation is, for lack of revelation, the people perish. And I realized I needed to start asking God what he wanted, and then doing that. And he took Big Idea Productions it's either dissolved or was turned over to somebody else, because someone's still making VeggieTales. And he now has a different company, and I'm going to look up the name right now because it'd be useful to my point. Can I just say I really, really love Google? I don't know, well, I do know what people used to do before Google. They made stuff up, or they had giant encyclopedias. But anyway, it was Big Idea Entertainment. I just looked it up, and then I lost it. Hang on while I look it up again. Da-da-da, talk amongst yourself. It was Big Idea Entertainment. And Big Idea Entertainment was sold to another company when everything went south. And now he has Jellyfish Labs. But what he said about Jellyfish Labs is the people that work with me, and me especially, when we want to do something, we take it to God. We wait on him. And then when he says, this is what I want you to do, then we do it. So there is an example of somebody who has failed in the, I'm going to step out, do things my way, and trust that God will bless it, humbled and doing things a different way. And there are others. I said that in the Bible I could not find any examples of that. And like I said, I was wrong. And there is Paul. But the version of, I'm going to wait on God and do what he tells me, are there examples of that in the Bible? Oh, you betcha. There's Nehemiah, who did as God told him to and rebuilt the wall of Jerusalem. There is Elijah, who did as God told him to when it came up to facing the prophets of Baal. There's Joseph. And I like Joseph. I remember, I make a point of remembering Joseph's story because, boy, did he have a season of waiting. You know, God revealed to him that his brothers and mother and father would bow down to him. God revealed in the dreams these things that he was going to accomplish. And then he got sold into slavery. And then he was accused falsely of rape. And then he got to languish in prison. And I would have been so upset in that prison cell. I would have been so mad at God. And I will never know, but maybe I would have just given up on the whole thing. But Joseph didn't. Obviously he didn't, because he must have been a pretty good example of a follower of Yahweh, that he would be put in charge of the prison. And even then, when he interpreted the dream of the cupbearer and said, you are going to be restored to Pharaoh in 3 days' time. And by the way, when you do, would you mention that I'm down here? And the cupbearer is indeed restored and forgets all about Joseph for years, another 2 or 3 years. And then the Pharaoh has a dream and the cupbearer's like, oh, dope slap. You got to talk to this guy. And Joseph is finally released from prison. In all that time, there's no indication that he lost faith. He waited on God. Joshua. And this is a good example of actually, it does kind of work both ways, that Joshua asked God, what do we do with Jericho? And God told him, and it was a crazy plan, what God told the Israelites to do to overthrow Jericho is not found in the works of Sun Tzu, The Art of War. It's not something you're going to find in any military textbook, but it was God's plan, and God's plan works. So they walked around the city silently once a day for 6 days, and then on the seventh day they walked around it 7 times, and then they raised a shout, and the walls took care of themselves. They didn't have to lay siege to the city. Later, though, and I may have talked about this last week, I don't know if I'm repeating myself. Well, I do have a nice voice, at least. Later, Joshua decides, great, that went really well, so let's go up against Ai. And he did not consult with God, and they went up against Ai and were trounced. And it turned out there was sin in the camp, and that had to be dealt with. And after it was dealt with, Joshua said, okay, God, now what would you have us do? He learned his lesson. And when God said, then Joshua did. Moses, boy, talk about a period of waiting. God saved him, and it was a miracle that he was allowed to live as a baby. Fantastic story in the book of Exodus. And then God said, don't I know my Bible? I thought I did. God says that Moses is going to be his champion, but this is after 40 years of Moses just being a nomad in the desert. And God speaks to him out of this burning bush, and he says, you are going to be my champion. And he sends him to Pharaoh, tells him what to do, and Moses does it. And again, season of waiting. He spent 40 years wandering in the desert with the grumbling Israelites. He spent 40 years in the wilderness before God called him. His life was about waiting, but when he let God tell him, this is what I want you to do, and then he acted, instead of just jumping out and thinking he knew better. Except for the one time where he was, may not have been that he thought better, it was that he let his, it It may not have been that he thought he knew better. It was that he let his emotions run away with him. But God said, speak to the rock, and he struck the rock. He decided to do things his way instead of God's way, and he paid a price for that. Abraham. Now, Abraham is an example. There's an example of, as I did speak about last week, of I'm going to help God. God said this is going to happen, and he said it would happen this way. This isn't working out, so I'm going to help him. And instead of waiting on God to have a child with Sarah, he went ahead and had a child with his handmaiden. And that created Ishmael, and that created, so far, about 6,000 years of strife. But nonetheless, he did receive the son of his promise, and then he was submitted to God in where that son was concerned. When God challenged him to sacrifice Isaac, Abraham was willing to do so. And you can read about that in Genesis. God spared Isaac, and they sacrificed a ram instead. But Abraham was willing to sacrifice the most important thing to him, the son of the promise, his future, which is important now, but was huge in the culture in that time. If you did not have a son, you were valueless as a man. And so Abraham waited on God, and he did what God told him. When God said, hey, I want you to leave the land that you've always known and go in this direction, and I'll tell you when to stop, Abraham said, okay, and he went. Very, very serious faith. And so his faith, in Hebrews it talks about that his faith was credited to him as righteousness. He believed and trusted God that much. And just for one more example, in case we needed one more, and this is a good one, Jesus himself said, I do nothing but what the Father wants. In John 5, Jesus is speaking, and he says, I do nothing of my own accord, but only that which I see my Father doing. Jesus himself, if anybody, had the right to say, I'm going to step out in faith and trust that my Father, God, will bless it, it would have been Jesus. But he says, nothing that I do is of my own accord. I submit myself to the Father. Even though Jesus was God, I submit myself to the Father in all things. That being the example that's been set out before me, that is what I am endeavoring to do. And I have examples in my own life, and this comedy one is only the latest. When I was 17, I made a request of God. Yeah, when I was 17, I asked God to arrange my marriage. Because I had a brief moment of lucidity in a lifetime of obsession with the idea of being with someone romantically. And I was like, you know, who knows more people than God? Who has more contacts? Who has more resources? Who would make a better matchmaker than God? And I did at least have the faith to believe that God cared about me, and that if it mattered to me, it mattered to him. And that not only did he have the power to act, but also that he loved me enough to act. And so I asked him to play matchmaker, and he agreed to. I didn't get married for another 17 years. And so I spent a lot of time in that 17 years trying to help God. Not to the level of creating an Ishmael, but rather than waiting on him, and rather than, before I dated somebody, clearing it with him, I just went ahead and stepped out in faith. When, you know, I would only date girls who were Christians. There were some things that is like, okay, there are ways to do this that would be dumb. But even so, even with some wise boundaries in my dating, I spent a lot of time and energy and emotion getting it wrong. Nothing against any of the young ladies that I dated, and God taught me a lot through those experiences, but I don't know that any of what I learned through dating I needed to learn that way, and through that much hardship and pain. And I do know that I would love to have a tenth of the hours back that I spent pining and wooing and being heartbroken. Just so much struggle in 17 years, and I don't know that I helped God at all. It's a long story I'll probably tell in another podcast, but for me to meet Tiffany, my wife, for me to understand, for God to open my eyes when the time was right to see, hey, this is the one I've chosen. He kept me from seeing her as a romantic possibility for various reasons, and not because she was not fantastic and beautiful. But he arranged things perfectly, and the story of our courtship and engagement and marriage has been is a fantastic story. I love telling it because God's fingerprints are all over it, and it only happened when I finally stopped trying to help him. Another example, in 2001, was not a space odyssey, it was a data entry odyssey. I was making my living typing up bad checks into a computer. The job was awful, I was miserable. And a very good friend of mine, name drop, Dave Hodel, boom, sat me down with a whiteboard and a marker and said, listen, we can see that you're miserable and maybe this will help. What would you do if you could do anything? And the first thing that came out of my mouth was, I would love to film and edit video. I had spent several years at a TV station, late 90s. I had been able to create the video for my senior class. I loved making videos. Had never even slightly thought about it being something I could make money at. But that's the first thing that was on the list. And I don't remember what 2 through 8 were. I think we wrote down another 7 things. What I do know is, as I walked away from his house, God spoke to me. The Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, I'm going to give you a video business. And this was the summer of 2001. And I came up with a business name, Ninja Boy Productions. I trademarked that name. And that was the only useful thing I did for the business. 6 months passed. And when I say the only useful thing, it wasn't the only thing I did. Because God had said he was going to give me a video business. So I stepped out in faith to try to help God make that happen. And I tried to interest real estate companies in making videos. I printed up flyers and put them around the neighborhood where I lived to make like memorial videos for people. I contacted some music providers to see what it would take to license songs for that sort of thing. It turns out it takes a whole bunch of money. Surprise. Anyway, I spent a lot of time and effort and energy and some money and accomplished absolutely nothing. I didn't make a dime for 6 months. Continued doing my horrible data entry job and started thinking I had heard wrong, that I'd screwed something up. And then God dropped the first elementary school client in my lap. It just so happened, and a lot of my stories have that in them, and that's code. When I say it just so happened, that's code for God supernaturally providing a blessing that I would not have been able to do on my own. It just so happened that in the community group I was part of, there was a young lady whose mother just so happened to be the music director at a school, and it just so happened they wanted somebody to film the Christmas video that year. And so this chain of events that I could not have put together, and you can believe it's coincidence if you want, and I don't think much of anything is coincidence. I think it's supernatural. God dropped the first client in my lap, Cimarron Elementary School, in the winter of 2001, and I didn't even realize that we were going to make copies or sell them. I just thought I was going to record it, put it onto VHS tape, because it was, you know, 01, and give it to this music director, and that would be the end of it. We sold 26 copies, which is about 3 times average, I have come to learn. And I thought, wow, that's not a bad way to earn some money. And so God led me to elementary schools. God later led me to dance recitals. Once again, it just so happened that my sister had been taking dance, and there was a company that the worship leader at my church was with, and they just so happened to need somebody. And over and over and over that has happened. And in the 14 years that I've had this business, every time I have tried to make more business happen, I spent a lot of time and effort and money 1 year trying to get into wedding business. God didn't say, I want you to look into wedding business. I just took it upon myself to think that would be a great way to earn money. And nothing worked. All of the effort I put into it was all in vain. And yet, right after that season is when dance recitals really started picking up. And God said, I want you to pursue dance recitals. And I said, okay. And that avenue worked, where weddings didn't. I tried to get a job at Fox 31. They needed editors way back in 03, I think it was, when, there's a morning radio personality. I want to say Steve. I'm getting Dave Logan and this guy Steve confused. Anyway, they were starting up Good Morning Colorado, and they still have a morning show. It's not Steve whoever anymore, but they needed editors, and I sent in, again, VHS tape, some of the stuff I'd put together working for the TV station, and they liked it enough that I got an interview. And boy, I begged God for that editing job, where I would have had to get up at 2 a.m. every morning to work from 3 to 6. Maybe it was 3 to 9, whatever it was. I would have been working like 20, 25 hours a week. I would have had benefits. Would have had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Can't stress that enough. And it would have been miserable, I think. We'll never know. I didn't get the job, even though I begged God for it. And looking back, I'm so thankful. I am so thankful that I never had a period of getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm thankful that I didn't have to work for Fox. I don't know, but everyone I've ever talked to who does know says it's not a great place to work. I'm not intending to be slanderous. All I know is what I have heard, and everyone who has worked there or knew someone who worked there says it's not the greatest working environment. Maybe it's better now. But it was not what God wanted, and all of my effort into trying to help him with that was in vain. So, the examples of my dating life and also my work life, I have spent so much time and energy and money trying to help God do the things that he's already said he was going to do. And usually, almost always, I can't think of a time when it's different. It's just in vain. It's just money and time and energy down the drain. So I'm trying, in this season with my comedy, I'm trying to learn from my mistakes. And that's why for the past 2 months, I have not pursued the possibility of Lanny's Clock Tower Cabaret. I have not made and sent out DVDs. I have not tried to make anything happen. Because God has not told me what happens next. I really, really would like him to say something. I don't like waiting. This season of waiting is difficult. It's frustrating. I really, really, really care about doing comedy. I love making people laugh. And I want to do more of it. The one thing I have done that I believe I'm free to do is keep writing. And in the 2 months since we did the show, I've written probably about 30 minutes of new material, which is a lot. 15 minutes in a month is, that's a lot. But my wife is pregnant and there was a birthing video, and so some of this stuff writes itself. And so I'm still in this. I still have a toe in the water, I guess, but I want to get out there. And another thing that's been a challenge, I was listening to, I keep telling you guys, if you're not listening to the Anthony Crawford podcast, why not? Maybe because you need a podcast to BG rated, I understand, but if you can handle, and it's not like it's filthy, it's just, you know, there's occasional adult language. If you can handle occasional adult language, it's a fantastic resource for comics and anyone that's interested in a behind the scenes look at this process. But he had a guest on, I want to say it was Ben Roy, talking about other comics, and not specifically, but just about the comedy in general. And he said, you know, you guys are having fun right now. Enjoy this season. He's talking to comics at my level, you know, guys that are doing open mics. We haven't really broken out. He said, enjoy this. It's still fun. And he's one of several comics I've heard say that, that once it gets to be, you're getting paid for this, not necessarily so much fun anymore. But he also said, you know, you want to be on the B-list at Comedy Works. Once you get there, you'll want to be on Almost Famous at Comedy Works. Once you get there, you'll want to be doing festivals. You get festivals, you'll want to be, it's like nobody's ever happy where they are. It's always about the next step, which is interesting. But he also said, and this is the point I really want to make, he said, don't be envious of other comics. You know, I see so many comics sitting around crabbing about, and that's not the word he used, but I'm trying to keep this G-rated, crabbing about what some other comic has gotten. How'd they get this show? How'd they get that opportunity? And it's like, don't worry about it. You get better, and then you'll get this show, then you'll get that opportunity. And when I was listening to the podcast, I was like, yeah, right on. I'm glad I don't do that. And literally less than a week later, a friend and fellow comic contacted me. He wanted me to videotape. He's got 2 performances in December. And all of a sudden, I was burning up with envy for this guy. He's got 2 performances in December before hundreds of people. I've got nothing in December and nothing in January and apparently nothing in February because I'm not conservative enough. And the Holy Spirit reminded me of what I heard Ben Roy say. And God was like, really? You don't do that, huh? And I was like, oh, darn it. And I had to deal with my envy, and I had to take that before the Lord and submit it. Because whatever God has for me is what he has for me. And these opportunities that this other comic has are not my opportunities. And me being envious of him or worse, trying to say, oh, well, you know, he's not that great a comic, and it's probably going to, you know, his flame's going to flicker out and die. When I realized I was doing that, I repented. I asked God for forgiveness of that. And I started praying for him. I started praying for God to bless his comedy. Whenever I find myself getting envious of somebody's achievements or starting to put them down, either to somebody else or even in my own head, I start praying for him instead, because I don't need that attitude in my life. But it's a challenge sometimes. I see others succeeding, I feel like I'm failing. Because, you know, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. Well, that may be correct for some people, but the way I'm trying to live my life and the way I feel is wise to live my life, I am doing exactly what God wants me to do right now. I am not trying to find more business clients. I'm, in fact, holding back from looking for more business clients because God made it clear recently that me being a father to Isaac, me being primary caregiver of the little boy that's about to come into this world, that's my main job right now. I really, really want more comedy opportunities, and when, you know, ideas strike me, I'm writing them down, I'm working on new material, but right now I'm waiting for God to tell me what does he want me to do next. Not only because I've proven time and again that me getting out ahead of God just wastes time and energy and money, and I'm trying to be smart and not waste time and energy and money, but also, if I get out ahead of God, if I start making this comedy thing too important, I can get out of balance. And the way my life needs to go is God first, then my wife, then my son and any other children that come along, and then my community, the people around me. And then, after that, comes comedy, comes work, comes whatever. But God needs to be first, my wife needs to be second, my children need to be third, and the people around me, my extended family, and that means, you know, people at church, my neighbors, my friends that I love, the people I meet on the street, you know, whoever God would have me bless, they come next. And moment to moment, you know, there might be a moment where comedy, you know, an hour where, okay, this is the focus right now. Of course, things fluctuate in terms of what's my highest priority. Like this past hour, I've been doing a podcast. I haven't been doing anything for my wife or my kid or my business. Right now, comedy is my highest priority. But over the course of this day, God needs to come first, and then my wife, and then my kids. Well, kid for now. If there's more, God hasn't said, but we'll see. Now, I'm saying if that priority structure gets out of order, then life is out of order and people start getting hurt. And you don't have to take my word for it. Louis C.K. has talked about it. If you like Christian comics, there is a... Shonda Pierce just released a movie. Apparently she talks about it. I have heard comic after comic after comic talks about it. Richard Pryor, in his biography, I believe, talks about it, where if comedy becomes the most important thing, things start falling apart. There's a reason why God set things up to be in that order, and he needs to be first. And anything that's more important to than English, anything that's more important to me than him is an idol, and that's when people start getting hurt. So even a good thing, like my wife, she is a very good thing, and me loving her, I need to put her second. She needs to be second and not first. My kids need to be third and not second. I probably don't have time to get into all that, but you know, if kids are more important than the marriage, that's out of balance and things start falling apart. And certainly if kids are more important than God, that's way out of balance. So last week's podcast, today's podcast, the last hour and a half of my podcast life has all been basically to say I have surrendered everything unto God and I'm doing what he tells me to. And I have an analogy for that. Again, if anyone's like, you know, I'm still not getting this. If, think of your comedy hero. If Brian Regan, for me, say, or possibly a better example, say Jay Leno, because he's known for being a producer, he's also known for working clean, I believe. If Jay Leno happened across my YouTube video and called me and said, listen, kid, I think you're fantastic. I really love your stuff, and I want to see your comedy career grow. So if you agree, I will become your manager, your agent, your everything. My contacts are your contacts. My experience, your experience. I will run, you know, we'll run through your jokes. We'll make them better. We'll punch them up. I would be a fool not to say yes to that. I mean, honestly, Jay Leno Name drop. Boom! Jay Leno wanted to use all of his power and ability and experience to make my comedy better, to, you know, make my funny star shine, he said, wondering why that came out of his mouth. I would be a fool to say no to that. He knows so many more people. He has so much more experience. The flip side of this coin, though, is in Jay Leno's fictional offer, I need to do what he says. So if he says, you know, you don't do any comedy for 5 years, or he says he wants me to start going and telling jokes at prisons, if he says, I need you to do something that you don't want to do, but you got to trust me that I know more about this than you do, that's where it could become difficult. And if I was in that situation, would I trust Jay Leno's experience and wisdom? And would I trust that he cared enough about me, that he was serious about helping me and not just trying to, you know, screw me over for a laugh? So that's a poor analogy, but it's one way of looking at this is what I'm doing with God. Talk about someone who's funny. He invented the concept of humor. He knows more people than Jay Leno. He knows everybody. He has every opportunity. He has all power. There is nothing that he would want to accomplish with my comedy that cannot be accomplished. But the flip side is, while I have access to his power and his contacts and all those good stuff, it's like Jay Leno has called me, only 1,000 times better, 1,000,000 times better. The flip side is, if I really want God to put his weight behind my comedy, I have to do this his way. I have to yield up any level of control that I have and submit myself to him and say, okay, what do you want? Even if that means that what he wants is something I would not choose. You know, if God says what he really wants is for me to go down to 16th Street Mall and just stand on a street corner and tell jokes, which I have nightmares about, is the last thing I want to do. If that's what he wants, then I do it. If he says he wants me to start contacting prisons and see about telling jokes to prisoners, that's not something I really want to do. But if he says that's what I want, then either I do it or I'm on my own. If I really want him behind this, then I have to do this his way. The Jay Leno analogy is one. Another is, and this is actually a little more closer to the truth, where everything in my life is concerned. It's not even like I'm working for somebody. It's more like I am under the authority of somebody. If I joined the Air Force, my dad was in the Air Force, his dad was in the Air Force. If I joined the Air Force, the full weight of the military industrial complex would be behind me if I was following orders. If my commander says, go here and do this, I can trust that the government would supply what I need to go there and do that. But if my commander says, go here and do this, I don't have the right to say, no, I'm going to go this other way and do this other thing. And that's what I believe it means to be submitted to God. Jesus talked about the kingdom. In fact, he talked about the kingdom more than he talked about anything else, according to my pastors, and I believe them. And in this country, we don't think about kingship. We don't think about true submission very much because, you know, we're individuals. We do our own thing. That's what this country was founded on. Manifest destiny out of my way. But we can think that all we want to, but there is still a God, and that God is still in authority, and he is gracious enough to let us go off the reservation, to let us say, no, I don't trust you, I don't believe you, I don't believe in you, I'm going to do my own thing. He'll let us do that. But if I want his power to be, and not behind me even, if I want to hitch my wagon to God's star, if I want my life to have the most significance that it can have, to be the most useful, to be the most blessed, if I want true peace, if I want true freedom, that only comes if I turn everything over to God and say, I submit willingly, I submit myself to your authority. I will do anything that you want. And that is what I try to do. I have said this to God many, many times, and I'll say it again right now. God, everything I have, everything I am, is yours. Do with me as you will. And that might look like shameful passivity to some, but I don't care what you think, not compared to what I care what God thinks. And those that are struggling, circling back to the Michael Crichton quote that I opened all this with, those that are struggling for the next, a new job, a new relationship, a new whatever, the next whatever. Those that are struggling, I watch you guys, and it doesn't seem like you're really having fun. Being submitted the way I am, sometimes it means periods of waiting, like what I'm doing with my comedy right now. And sometimes it means being in the wilderness. Sometimes it means dealing with things, facing things that I don't want to deal with, that I don't want to face. But I will say this to my dying day. Every moment of this journey with God, even the stuff that was awful, was better than anything on the journey without God. And it's a story I'll tell another time. I've been a believer basically as long as I can remember, but it wasn't until I was 22 that God really got hold of me and we really started turning things around. And in the last 15 years that I've been like, okay, God, wherever you want to go, we'll go. Even the awful days were better than anything that came before. And there is such a peace, there is such a joy, it's such a thrill being on his team. I was recently listening to The Lord of the Rings on an audio recording. I think, what a thrill it would have been to be in the Fellowship, being commanded by Aragorn, being directed by Gandalf. And to think, well, I've got that only times a million because the God of all the universe cares about me and has a plan for this world and for his kingdom, and my life is part of that. And I'm submitted to that, and it is a heck of a thing to be plugged into. So, yeah, it's a serious comedy podcast today where, for the record, for those that are listening, if anybody is, the best possible way, you want to know the secret to life, figure out that God really does exist, understand that he loves you, and then turn your life over to him and watch things happen. It is a heck of a ride, and I'm glad to be on it, even right now in this season of waiting. So you have been so gracious to listen to me be all serious. I think that wraps it up for today. I will, however, give you a parody song. And this is just a little bit of fun. One of the first parody songs I ever wrote, and I have no instrument turned on or ready, but I think my voice is there. This is what I think about the ever-lovely Miley Cyrus. Hello, iTunes, my old friend. I've come to download songs again. What's this free offering you have today? The dulcet minstrel tones, I'll just press play. When my ears are stabbed by a voice cutting through my brain, so much pain to hear the sounds of Cyrus. Now Miley's father was well known, his achy breaky heart alone sold more than 40 million records then. Thank God that he was not heard from again. And I will refuse to believe differently. He was not heard from ever again. But his daughter's taken up the mantle of dear old dad. And it's just as bad. Those horrid sounds of Cyrus. Across this country I can see folks out there just like you and me. People texting, chatting, and tweeting. People talking without listening. People writing songs that make no earthly sense. Or am I just dense about the sounds of Cyrus? Fools say, ah, you cannot know. Pop music like a cancer grows. The Biebers and the Lady Gaga's form. An auditory Kansas thunderstorm. And we all will drown in the mediocrity. that started with the sounds of Cyrus. And everybody bows and prays to the American Idol craze. People, this is my last warning. Read my lips, the words I'm forming. For I tell you, she'll keep writing songs until we have no brain cells left. Wish I was deaf to miss the sounds of Cyrus. Just a little jab at Miley, who's never going to hear this and probably wouldn't care if she did. Thank you for listening today. It's an honor for me to know that people are out there and care about what I have to say. And it's also fun to get this on record, because when the season of waiting is over and God starts to move, like he has in my business, like he certainly did in my marriage, well, it'll be fun to talk about what's going on then. So until then, I hope you're having a fantastic holiday season. Own your Christmas stage, and we'll see you next week.